Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, our good news, once again, somewhat surprisingly, deals with the 2016 U.S. Senate races. As we mentioned earlier in the week, Republicans playing a lot of defense. It's not impossible, certainly, to keep the majority, but they're going to have to fight hard to do it. We had good news early in the week when Congressman Joe Heck, the top choice of Republicans, agreed to run for the open seat in Nevada, where Harry Reid is retiring. Then there was the viral video in Pennsylvania of Joe Sestak effectively trampling small children as he ran along in a 4th of July parade. And now we get wonderful news out of Florida, where there's an open seat because Marco Rubio is running for president instead of re-election. This is courtesy of Roll Call. Congressman Alan Grayson, a liberal firebrand whose outspokenness irks members of his own party, will announce a bid for Florida's open Senate seat. He'll do it Thursday morning on a Florida TV station, according to a source with knowledge of his plans. Grayson's entry into the race could turn into a messy primary with fellow Florida Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy, the pick of National Democrats for this competitive seat. And Alan Grayson has been around for a few years in Washington. Jim, this is probably his most famous ridiculous quote on the floor of the House of Representatives. This is back during the Obamacare debate where he said the Republican plan was for people to not get sick, but this was their backup plan.
If you get sick, America, the Republican health care plan is this. Die quickly. That's right. The Republicans want you to die quickly if you get sick.
So he lost his re-election fight to Daniel Webster due to redistricting. He got to win again in a more liberal seat, but he's giving it up to run statewide, Jim. So we really hope he wins the nomination and then gets creamed in November.
You know, I'd written a few pieces on this saying that this was going to be a challenging seat for Republicans to hold. And it's not that Florida is this overwhelmingly Democratic state. It's just that this is a state with a lot of people, I think like 11 or 12 major media markets. You got to run, you know, TV commercials on all of them. This is an expensive state to run in. This is a state that's going to have very high turnout in a presidential year. Romney came close last time, but Obama won. Obama won in 2008. And so even though, you know, Republicans had done, you know, fantastic jobs in the midterm elections and gubernatorial elections and Rubio won and things like that, you know, this looked like it was going to be a challenging race. It gets much easier if Alan Grayson is the nominee. And so right now we are pulling for him. Alan, we're 100% behind you. Good luck. Because he's kind of just the walking personification of everything that's horrible about modern politics. Even by the wacky standards of Florida, the, you know, Republican nominee just has to be a normal human being, and it'll be a much, much easier case to ask Floridians, do you really want this obnoxious, combative, snotty, derisive, you didn't use the quote of him calling a witness for a federal panel a K-Street whore. He's just a horrible guy. And as a result of that, I think Republicans have a, you know, much, much easier chance of winning if they're up against Grayson.
Yeah, absolutely the case. He also called Dan Webster, the guy who beat him in 2010, Taliban Dan, I think just due to the fact that he was pro-life. And I think he's still going through a divorce battle that is bizarre and ugly. And if you care to read up on that, you will have no trouble finding it online. On to the bad martini now, Jim. And in light of Alan Grayson's Obamacare comments, this seems like an appropriate one today. One of the big concerns and criticisms of the Obamacare bill before it became law was over the so-called death panels. And here is what we're learning today. 6 years after end-of-life planning nearly derailed development of the Affordable Care Act amid charges of death panels, the Obama administration has revived a proposal to reimburse physicians for talking with their Medicare patients about how patients want to be cared for as they near death. So, Jim, they're back.
Remember all the pro-life Democrats who got assurances that nothing in Obamacare would pay for abortions?
Right.
Right. I mean, they end up looking like a bunch of suckers. I'm thinking back to the argument that it totally was not a tax, that Obamacare did not raise taxes, right? You know, and then when they had to defend it before the Supreme Court, oh, the individual mandate, it's totally a tax. It's totally a tax. It's nothing out of the ordinary for government, et cetera. Basically, everything they said to defend this law is turned out to be a lie. We shouldn't be surprised by this. We were saying it was a lie at the time. Joe Wilson said it, I think, quite loudly, and perhaps at not the most appropriate venue, but he was prescient. It was not, you know, it may not be polite, but it certainly was an accurate assessment of what Obama was saying then. Here we are again. It is depressing. You can kind of get this Soylent Green vibe of, you know, well, do you really need that care? Aren't you getting up in years? Aren't you feeling kind of tired? Just take the blue pill. if you already suspect we are a culture that does not respect life, this feels like it's a very big step in the wrong direction, Greg.
I still remember Obama talking about end-of-life decisions in general and talking about how his grandmother really shouldn't have gotten a hip replacement when she was in her mid-80s, because what's the point? So,
yeah,
very compassionate.
When that guy can be callous to his own grandmother, all right, I think it kind of tells a little bit about how he feels about you. And yet somehow he won on that who cares more about people like you question.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Okay, on to the crazy martini now, and the immigration debate certainly driving the headlines in a lot of different ways in the past few weeks. But here's a new twist from your nation's capital. This is courtesy of the Daily Caller. District of Columbia council members voiced their support Wednesday for a new law that would allow non-citizens to vote in local elections. These are residents who are well on their path to citizenship, Councilman David Grosso said. Unfortunately, not all of our residents have a say in the politicians who are elected to represent them. The bill would allow permanent residents in the city who are not American citizens to vote in elections for mayor, city council, the attorney general, and state board of education members, among other things, essentially anything that relates specifically to the District of Columbia. So, Jim, we're starting to see a very slippery slope when it comes to where the Democrats are lining up on this issue.
Yeah, I seem to remember there were some towns up, I want to say, in Massachusetts that were looking at this a while ago. And New York City, I think, also was examining this. Why is it a controversial statement that U.S. elections should be decided by U.S. citizens? Do we get to go over and vote in France's elections, Greg?
No.
I thought Greece made some terrible... Were we allowed to go over and vote in theirs?
Even I wasn't, no.
I don't quite understand, you know, like why that's considered unjust, why that's considered some... it seems kind of, you know, fairly basic. You want to vote in our elections, you got to become a citizen. Very, you know, very simple there. And I think the idea would be, well, you know, well, we're localities, we can make our own rules, we're going to decide that for ourselves. But obviously, once you get used to the idea of voting in a city election or a locality election, why wouldn't you then get into the habit of voting in presidential elections and federal races and things like that? And oh, by the way, just how thorough will those little old ladies working behind the table at the polling places be able to do to check that sort of thing? We've already saw that study that said that probably quite a few illegal immigrants voted in the 2008 election, probably swung the state of North Carolina. Some people disputed the data there. But what's kind of interesting is the sneaking sense that no one would say, oh, no illegal immigrants vote in American elections. Right? I mean, it's now set. And it seems like this is designed to be a step to get a lot more illegal Americans voting in American elections. And that's illegal. The concept of following the rules is very rapidly eroding before our eyes, Greg, almost like a sandcastle as the tide comes in.
What are they going to do, print separate ballots on general election days? You can vote in these races, but you can't vote in these.
That's what probably they'd have to do, and it's very easy to imagine the ballots getting mixed up. Oh, no. Well, we'll have to count all of them then.
This is a really good argument for D.C. statehood, by the way. You're really showing that you're mature and can handle the responsibility.
Statehood or separatism, Greg? Let them be their own country. You know? Jobs Americans won't do, we'll outsource it to foreigners.
Like voting. All right, Jim, on that note, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.